The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, an ugly controversy about Herschel Walker raises the question of the future of the Senate after the midterms, and I'll be talking about that. I'll ponder the significance of Ray Epps. He's kind of the dog that didn't bark in the January 6th investigation. There's been a prisoner exchange with Venezuela conducted by the Biden regime. I'll talk about that. Kash Patel joins me. We're going to talk about FBI corruption and a new children's book that he has out that involves 2,000 mules. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
A huge controversy has erupted over Herschel Walker in Georgia, a very ugly controversy. His son, Christian Walker, who's been on this podcast, weighing in. And there are some people who think it's very bad for Herschel Walker's chances in Georgia. And this, of course, would mean that virtual communist Raphael Warnock would have six more years, a kind of almost a nightmarish prospect, something that's made even more nightmarish occurring in a red state. Now, I'm going to talk in more detail about all of this tomorrow, because I want to go into some of the details of it, but I'm not going to do that here. Here I want to take a broader view of what's happening with the U.S. Senate. Now, first, let me say that I think the issue in Georgia is not Herschel Walker's behavior. Rather, it is do we, and by we here I mean Georgians, but also Americans, do we want someone as far left as Raphael Warnock to be representing a red state and perhaps tipping the balance or keeping the balance for the Democrats in the U.S. Senate? Think about the long-term implications of the Democrats having Senate control, implications for a Supreme Court, implications for so many other things. So very difficult for us as Republicans to keep our eye on the ball. We're often sort of trapped into this, our candidate has moral failings. We've got to pull out our long knives and sort of stab him ourselves. Democrats would never do this. If Raphael Warnock did exactly what Herschel Walker did, exactly the same, the left would A, laugh it off, dismiss it, poo-poo it, ignore it. And second of all, even more audacious, they would turn around and accuse the publications that talked about it of racism for going after a black man and a pastor. How dare you? So look at the difference in psychology between the two sides. And Georgia could, in fact, end up determining control of the Senate. Now, there is a pathway for Republicans to take the Senate and have narrow control. By narrow control, I mean 51, maybe 52 seats, even while losing Georgia. The good news, and I'm looking for good news on this day with all this very unfortunate and ugly controversy involving the Walker family. But in Wisconsin, the Senate seat looks like it's going to go to Ron Johnson over Mandela Barnes. Johnson was behind, but he's now pushed ahead. Barnes is being flayed for his positions on defund the police. I think that Johnson is going to win this seat, so that's not something we have to worry about too much. In Ohio, I think J.D. Vance is looking pretty good. Interestingly, now in Pennsylvania, Dr. Oz, who was trailing badly behind Fetterman, some Democrats thought, we've already got Pennsylvania in the bag. Fetterman, by the way, is a horrible candidate, not to mention the fact that after his stroke, you can barely understand what the guy is saying. He sounds even worse in some cases than Biden. But Oz, I think, is finally hitting his groove. He has moved into a statistical tie with Fetterman. It's not saying much because Oz should be 20 points ahead. But you know, I'll take a narrow victory by Oz because that's a critical state, and that could be the one that gives Republicans the control of the Senate. In Arizona, Blake Masters is running behind Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly, of course, puts on the kind of astronaut outfit. And so many of us who were raised in at a time when the first man stepped on the moon, we've got this kind of dewy-eyed view of astronauts, the same way that many of us had a dewy-eyed view of the FBI, you know, derived from movies like The Untouchables. We've got to realize that there are astronauts and there are astronauts. I mean, there are astronauts and then there's Mark Kelly. And this guy is a left winger, but he's a left winger in an astronaut's costume, you might say. So I'm hoping that this gets out. And of course, it is Blake Masters' job to get it out in Arizona, help Arizonans to see what's happening with Mark Kelly, because that, I think, is a winnable seat for Blake Masters, even though the polls show, for whatever they're worth, that he is running significantly behind right now. Same story in Arizona, where Bolduc, the retired Army guy who has the Republican nomination, appears to be in an uphill fight for the Senate seat in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire, by the way, even though it's trended Democrat in recent years, it is a state that can go either way. It used to be a more conservative state. It was a conservative-leaning state when I was a student at Dartmouth in New Hampshire. But what's happened is that New Hampshire has gotten a lot of immigrants, you might say, immigrants from Massachusetts, some from Vermont. And these, you know, blue newcomers to New Hampshire, newcomers over the past few decades, have colored the state more blue than red. Now, all this is a way of saying that this is a very close call in the Senate. I think Republicans are feeling pretty good about taking the House. I hope they do it by a decisive majority. But it's also very important to win the Senate. And this is the case where if I were a Georgian, I would put aside any anxieties about what Herschel Walker did. Athletes are not exactly known as moral exemplars anyway in these areas. And so the issue is not Herschel Walker's human failings. It is what kind of a person, what kind of a set of beliefs, what kind of votes do we want from the senator who is elected in Georgia? Guys, you and we have helped to build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today. Despite all the cancellations, despite all the stuff that Mike Lindell goes through, we've trusted in Mike Lindell to give us a great night's sleep and produce some great products, and he has. Now, on top of the special, exclusively for my listeners, on the Percale and Giza Dream bed sheets, marked down as low as $29.98, Mike is now changing the game with his three-piece towel set. This set is made with USA cotton, making it extremely absorbent, yet still providing that soft feel that you look for in a towel. The set comes with one bath towel, one hand towel, one washcloth. Now, typically, retails for $49.99, but now for a limited time, you get this three-piece towel set for the low price of $19.98 with promo code Dinesh. Don't miss out. Incredible offer. Limited supply. Be sure to order now. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to mypillow.com. Now, these offers won't last long. They sell quick, so order now. You got to use promo code Dinesh. Mypillow.com, promo code Dinesh. I want to focus in this segment about on Ray Epps. Ray Epps, of course, is the guy who is perhaps the most conspicuous of all the January 6th protesters. He was the guy, let's go into the Capitol, pointing to the Capitol, caught on camera, egging people to go into the Capitol. And he does this repeatedly. In fact, his behavior is so anomalous that people around him start shouting, no, 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 and fed, essentially saying out loud what there's now strong reason to believe that in some way Ray Epps was a plant. He was an informant. He was an inside man, almost egging on people to do something so that they could then be right into a trap that he and others, his puppet masters, if you will, had perhaps set up for this purpose. We even see on video Ray Epps whispering into the ear of a protester just moments before that young man makes the first breach of the Capitol police's, well, seemingly inept or perhaps in some cases non-existent obstructions or defenses. Now, given all this, it would seem obvious that Ray Epps would be arrested, indicted, facing serious charges. If there's a conspiracy case to be made against anybody, it would seem that it would focus on Epps far more than on Stuart Rhodes, who was not even there and certainly didn't go inside the Capitol. So what's going on with Ray Epps? Paul Gosar wants to know, and he demanded that Attorney General Garland hand over all documents relevant to the Epps case. And he Gosar points out again the obvious. Epps is the one person on the video actively directing people toward and into the Capitol. Now, initially, the FBI seemed to be chasing down Ray Epps. He was they posted a video of him, a photo of him. He was apparently number 16 on the FBI hit list, seeking information. And then they quietly decided not to do anything with this guy. They removed him from their wanted list. He was not arrested. He hasn't spent a single night in jail. And so this all is very strange. Now, the New York Times doesn't think it's strange. In fact, they act like Ray Epps is, well, he's their favorite insurrectionist because they, here's, I'm reading now from the New York Times, Epps has suffered enormously in the past 10 months. Think of it. When does the New York Times write like this about a January 6th protester? As right-wing media figures and Republican politicians have baselessly, with no evidence, described him as a covert government agent who helped to instigate the attack on the Capitol last year. Now, why is the left rallying to the defense of this man? It seems odd. It contradicts their narrative. Everybody who was responsible for the breach of the Capitol should be held accountable, with the exception, evidently, of this one guy. And there's an interesting article in American Greatness. The article is called Why Ray Epps Matters, written by Jack Cashel. And it draws an interesting analogy between Epps and Alger Hiss. Now, I don't know if you remember Alger Hiss. Alger Hiss was a communist who was working high up in the U.S. State Department. He was named as a communist by Whitaker Chambers. Whitaker Chambers used to be a communist, but then defected away from communism with the memorable line, "When I left communism," says Chambers, "I felt I was joining the losing side." In any event, Chambers accuses Hiss, and the media rushes to Hiss's defense. How dare you suggest that Alger Hiss is a communist? Hiss ends up suing Whitaker Chambers for libel. But interestingly, in that libel case, the facts begin to come out. And as it turns out, Alger Hiss was, in fact, guilty. He was later convicted of perjury, and the left's defense of him was blown. Now, there were some leftists who continue, and some to this day, to insist that Alger Hiss was innocent. But the reason the left was protecting Alger Hiss so desperately is because they didn't want to vindicate the McCarthyite accusation that there were communists in high positions in the U.S. government, even though there were. Similarly, in this case, and this is the point of Cashel's article, the left is desperately protecting Epps. I mean, here's Representative Jamie Raskin, left-wing Democrat, basically talking about, quote, "the absurd whining about Ray Epps, who had absolutely nothing to do with any of it." Absolutely nothing. Here's a guy on video egging people to go into the Capitol. How can you say he... So this is a case where you know when the left is in its full protection mode here, that they are desperate to hang on to a narrative. And what's the narrative? that they had nothing to do with orchestrating January 6th. So January 6th was not a put-up job, that Ray Epps was not an inside man who had been instructed to get people into the Capitol so we can bust them. We can essentially use that to discredit all questioning of the election. We can basically get Biden in there. It's a done deal. That's actually what happened after that was the documented effect of January 6th. And so, again, cui bono, whom did January 6th benefit? It benefited the left. It benefited the Democrats. And therefore, the question is, did Democrats have something to do with it? I think, you know, I'm not a super fan of the flavor of veggies, but I have to admit, when I'm in the produce section, all the vibrant colors of fruits and veggies, even the veggies, look really good. Now, Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all the different colors you see in the produce section equal nutritional variety. Different colors signify different key nutrients. So if you eat only your favorite one or two veggies, well, you're missing out on a whole world of vital nutrients. This is why Debbie and I take these. It's the six little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31. So variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. The Biden administration is claiming credit for a prisoner exchange with the Maduro regime in Venezuela. And essentially, Biden released two nephews of Nicolas Maduro, the Venezuelan dictator. And these are relatives of his wife. They had been jailed. They were apparently arrested in Haiti on drug smuggling convictions. And Biden goes, you can have them back in exchange for seven Americans who were imprisoned in Venezuela, including, by the way, five oil executives who had been held for nearly 5 years. The case is actually kind of crazy. The five American oil executives went down to Venezuela in 2017. They were invited to a sort of a conference being hosted by the state-run oil company. It's called PDVSA, PDVSA. And so PDVSA had this supposed conference, and when these American oil executives show up, basically they're hauled off by security agents, later accused of embezzlement and convicted in a trial that was then upheld by the Venezuelan Supreme Court. Now, when I say all this, you know, Debbie will tell you more than anyone else that the Venezuelan Supreme Court is a rubber stamp. It's not a real Supreme Court. It was stacked by first Hugo Chavez and then Maduro, handpicked judges. The independence of the Venezuelan court has been destroyed. By the way, the left would be happy to try to do something like that here as well. The Supreme Court now is a big thorn in their side. So the Supreme Court in Venezuela basically upholds the conviction, but there appears to be no credible evidence that these guys were embezzlers of any sort. Now, I suppose one could make a broader ideological argument that by being oil executives and doing business in Venezuela, they are, quote, exploiting the country, and so they're embezzling from the people. So, but that is normally nothing more than sort of boilerplate socialist rhetoric. It's not the basis for convicting anyone because you don't have anything on them. But when you're in Venezuela, you don't need anything on them. If the dictator says, lock them up, they're going to be locked up. And essentially everything else is just a pro forma validation of what Maduro decides. Now, the guys who were released by Biden, Frankie Flores and his cousin Efrain Campo, they apparently are nephews of Celia Flores, whom Maduro, by the way, refers to as his, quote, first combatant. So this is the martial rhetoric of socialism. Everybody's a fighter. Everybody's a sort of a combatant in uniform, and the first combatant is Celia Flores. Now, what do we make of all this stuff? I mean, there are obviously quotations in the media and probably some video of these families were obviously relieved to have their relatives back. They're unjustly imprisoned over there. Thank you, President Biden. And I can understand that point of view. Obviously, it is heartbreaking to have a family member imprisoned, not just imprisoned, but imprisoned in a foreign prison, fate uncertain. And then it is obviously exhilarating to see them again, a dad, an uncle, and so on. But, and there's a big but, there's a high price to be paid in many cases for these so-called prisoner exchanges. Let's think back, and actually when Debbie and I were talking, she reminded me of this. Think back to the Bergdahl exchange. On the face of it, all right, we want to get this American guy back. Yeah, he's a loser. Yeah, he's a deserter. As it turns out, he's a Taliban sympathizer. I can kind of see why Obama wanted him back so much. But nevertheless, the idea is, okay, we got this American guy back and we release these five Taliban commanders. Well, what happens? They go back into the field. They become part of the Taliban resistance. They then engage in guerrilla warfare against the U.S.-backed government in Afghanistan. They overthrow that government. Those Taliban commanders, at least one of them, is now serving in the new Taliban government. So look at the implications of what Obama did. I'm not saying by itself, we don't know if that made a decisive difference, but we do know that these things cannot be seen simply as, okay, well, we get one guy, you get five guys, end of story. It's not the end of the story. In that case, it was merely the beginning of the story. So the United States here also appears to have a second motive, quite apart from getting the executives back and doing the exchange on its own terms. And that is, I think the Biden administration is trying to do more to legitimize the government of Venezuela, to legitimize this dictatorial regime. Why? Because it's a dictatorship of the left. And so Biden also has an oil interest here. He wants to obviously choke off reliance on Russian oil. And that means the United States becomes paradoxically more dependent on Iranian oil and more dependent on Venezuelan oil. Those are two oil-producing countries that nevertheless have their own agenda. Islamic radicalism in the one case, a kind of radical socialism on the other. But notice the kind of easy affinity of the Biden regime with both these corrupt and tyrannical regimes. It's almost like Biden recognizes that he's got at least some sort of ideological kinship with both. And so under the guise of, well, yes, you know, we've entered into very difficult negotiations and so on, the net effect here is to take a regime that is illegitimate, that's destroyed the country, that is imposing horrible burdens on its own people, and strengthen its hold on power. Are you watching your retirement slip through your hands every day? Are you worried about a black swan market event that could be coming? This is an event that comes out of nowhere and basically decimates your accumulated savings. That's not all. Interest rates going up, inflation skyrocketing. How can we protect our money? How can you get ahead of what's happening with the economy? This is not a time to wing it or go with a hunch. You need a qualified expert on your side. Well, I'm not that expert, but my friend Rebecca Walser is. She's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. Rebecca and her team will help to prepare you and your money for the turbulent times ahead. We all work hard for our money. We can use some really good guidance to help us build on what we have. Go to friendofdinesh.com, book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. That's friendofdinesh.com. Let Rebecca Walser's team of experts protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. As a movie maker, one of my challenges is to find these days platforms on which to release movies. The old platforms are a little unreliable. And I say that because if you release today a movie, I'm talking about for streaming or digital download, if you release it on Apple iTunes or on Amazon Prime, who knows? They don't like your movie. If there's enough of a hubbub or a protest or a critique, oh, the movie has a lot of disinformation, these platforms could take it down and take it down at the critical moment when the movie is released. Not good. Netflix is horribly left-wing. In fact, they've taken none of my movies. They bought one of them, Death of a Nation, but interestingly, they paid a pretty hefty price to acquire it for streaming rights, and then they never aired it. It's almost like they were paying for it to take it off the market so nobody else could get it. And so this is what happens with these platforms. So it's a difficult task to find a way to get films out. But this is why I was delighted when the guys who run the platform called Locals came to me and they said, basically, look, we are exploring the idea of Locals. Locals is a platform owned, by the way, by the video platform Rumble. They don't feature movies on Rumble, but you can have a movie on Locals. And the first movie that Locals hosted was 2000 Mules, and it was a runaway success. It's done fantastically well. And so Locals came to me and said, hey, we'd like to have you featuring other movies on your channel at Locals. And these are movies that people can check out and buy the movie, stream it, watch it, by paying a fee. Or they can join your Locals channel, which is $50 a year for an annual subscription. And they will have access to all the movies that are in your channel. Not to mention, I do an exclusive weekly Q&A. I post exclusive content, some of the censored content I can't post elsewhere. I post on Locals. So it's actually a really good deal. And I got the idea not only of showing my own movies, but finding really good independent films and working out a deal with the producers, featuring those films in my Locals channel. Again, they come basically as a package when you get an annual subscription. Debbie and I watched a film this past weekend that we really liked. It's called Long Road Home. It's the story of Johnny Cash and the Johnny Cash family. It's not a political film, but it's a very revealing, candid story of the whole Cash family, with Cash family members who turn out to be just very intriguing and vivid characters talking about their life. And it's, by the way, this is not a bed of roses. They're talking about addiction. They're talking about alcoholism. They're talking about being, you know, a hair's breadth away from death. So they're talking about the ordeal of just survival. And yet at the end, it's an inspirational story. It's a story of faith. It's a story of endurance. Debbie and I really liked it. We found it moving. We found it fantastic. And so, coming this weekend, on Friday, I'm going to feature this film, Long Road Home, on my Locals channel. Again, if you just want to watch the film, you can. You just buy it, you stream it, you watch it. But on the other hand, if you subscribe, you will get the film for free. And by the way, 2000 Mules is up there. And there's a whole train of other films that I'm negotiating to start putting up there. Eventually, I'd like to have, you know, it's a mini Netflix of my own, but these are handpicked films by me. I'm not going to put up rubbish. Think about going browsing Netflix. I mean, Debbie and I, we go, we've never heard of that one, but looks pretty good. Let's check it out. And inevitably, why did we waste 2 hours of our life? What a horrible movie. So that's the norm. That is the norm of that kind of content. So the film, again, Long Road Home, I'm going to have the producer of the film, Jack Vale, on the podcast tomorrow. And one of the central characters of this movie, Mark Cash, on the podcast the next day. So I'm actually excited about it. You'll hear more from Jack Vale tomorrow. Mark Cash, I guess, on Thursday. But if you want to watch a good movie this weekend, keep an eye out for it. You'll learn more about it. But my channel is just dinesh.locals.com. Just dinesh.locals.com. And maybe it's a good idea to go sign up for a annual subscription. The movie is going to be uploaded to my channel on Friday. You can watch it on Friday anytime or anytime over the weekend. So great stuff, and it'll obviously stay up there too. And I'm looking to release, to have another film go up later this month. There's a wonderful movie that Debbie and I saw that would be perfect for Christmas. We're talking to the producers about bringing that movie on board in December. I'm thrilled to have played a role, and a continuing role, in enabling this new platform to get going, because I think as conservatives, we have to build an alternative infrastructure, our own schools, our own universities, our own comedy channels and comedy clubs. We have to create our own America inside of America and then live in it. What some of us would do just to be young again, the simple things like climbing stairs, getting in and out of bed, taking a walk, aren't always that simple. Too many aches and pains, but they can be, because thankfully now there's a 100% drug-free solution to those aches and pains. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's a true believer. She can finally do the exercises she loves, planks, push-ups, her stationary bike, all thanks to Relief Factor. So it's really been a game changer for her and for many people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. Guys, I'm happy to welcome to the podcast Kash Patel. He was commissioned as a deputy assistant to President Trump, senior director for counterterrorism on the National Security Council. He went on to serve as deputy director of national intelligence and then chief of staff for the Department of Defense. By the way, Kash has a new book out. It's a children's book, and we're going to be talking about that in the second segment. We'll get to that. In fact, that's a book that also involves 2,000 mules, I'm happy to say. But Kash, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you. I thought we'd spend the first segment talking a little bit about the FBI, the deep state, and some of the latest revelations involving this guy, Danchenko. Now, for many people, after a while, these names become a little bit of a blur. It's a little difficult to keep track, but you keep track. So can you tell us who Danchenko is, and tell us the significance of what the latest revelations about him are?
Absolutely. And Dinesh, thanks so much for having me. Thank you to Debbie for setting this all up. Greatly appreciate the time. So as my time as a, you know, national security prosecutor, and then, you know, formerly as Devin Nunes' chief investigator, I guess I spend many of my days delving deep into this world. So what you have is the John, you know, some of the things that I just revealed this past week, I call it the confidential human source corruption cover-up network. And you and I both know that the FBI is supposed to use confidential human sources in tough cases. That's lawful. It's ethical, unless they do it unlawfully and unethically. And what I've been saying since the entry of Christopher Steele, and we all know his history for making up a totally false document and then hijacking the law enforcement community with the assistance of the Democratic National Party and Hillary and lying to a federal court just to get surveillance. That is the definition of using a confidential human source to cover up the government's corruption. So now we extend that to, you know, what Durham just was issuing in pleadings in federal court against this guy called Danchenko over the last week or two, and his trial's coming up. So John Durham is prosecuting Christopher Steele's number one source for the Steele dossier. And what has come out as a result of our investigations and all the great work everybody's been doing is that Danchenko told the FBI when Steele was making his dossier that it was barroom banter, that he made it up and gave it to him over beers, literally in a tavern in the United Kingdom or elsewhere. But the FBI went with it anyway. Here's the part that even floored me, though, Dinesh. Out of all the work I used to do and revealing this matter and putting out the largest criminal conspiracy that I call the FBI has ever perpetrated, after we showed Christopher Steele to have lied about his involvement and the FBI fired him, the next month, and I'm talking, wind the clock back to 2017, Christopher Steele's fired. The next month, the FBI goes and hires Danchenko to be a confidential human source. And that is just some of the most outrageous conduct I've ever heard. They did it with one reasoning. They knew that Danchenko material to Steele was bupkis. They knew Steele put false information to the FBI, but they thought, let's use American taxpayer dollars and pay Danchenko for 3 years. 3 years he was on the FBI payroll as a confidential human source. And here's the reason why. Simply, once you have a confidential human source, the FBI is allowed to tell everyone we can't jeopardize our sources and methods. We can't tell you Congress even about this investigation. Remember, Devin Nunes and I sent something like 15 subpoenas out for this information, and we were stonewalled and lied to by Rod Rosenstein and Chris Wray.
Now, I'm trying to figure out here the role of the FBI and the deep state, because Durham is prosecuting Danchenko for lying to the FBI. And you mentioned that Christopher Steele and Danchenko seemingly together came up with this sort of fabricated material, this fabricated story. But you said that the FBI also knew that this was barroom banter. So my question is, how do you lie to someone who you may say wants to be lied to, or is in fact soliciting those lies so that they can use those lies to go get an FBI, get a FISA warrant? I'm trying to figure out what the meaning of lying is when you basically got bad guys at both ends of the deal.
And that's just it. I think that's a great way to look at it. Normally in government, especially in service to this country, in law enforcement or national security matters, you have individuals who sign up to serve the mission, not a political agenda. But what happens was the deep state and government gangsters, as I call them, the likes of Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, and all these other individuals now that we're learning their names, Heidi and Auten and so forth, they were so anti-Trump or the MAGA movement or the America First movement that they were willing to jeopardize and break their oaths of office and break the law in order to get false information from shoddy sources, pay them, and then funnel that into the FISA court's stream to lie to a federal judge. They partnered with like-minded individuals. That's the thing. Christopher Steele, it's public now. He hated Donald Trump. He literally said, I will do anything to make sure he's not elected. They had that threat in common, and they saw Donald Trump as the biggest threat for whatever reason to the constitutional democracy. And here's the thing that always catches government gangsters. It's their arrogance. They thought, all these people that we just talked about, they thought, no one's ever going to catch us. So we will document everything ourselves and put it in a vault and no one will ever see it. And we caught them. And the documents have slowly started to come out. And that's the best way to educate, I think, the American public on the corruption that's at the FBI. And that's what John Durham is revealing. Even to a guy like me, 4 or 5 years later, I'm still learning a whole swath of new information from John Durham's prosecution of Danchenko.
Wow, this is fascinating. I mean, knowledge is certainly the first step. I mean, I would think that action is the second, and I'm certainly hoping Republicans are paying careful attention to all this as we go to the midterms. Cash, let's take a pause. When we come back, let's talk about your new book, your children's book, The Plot Against the King 2, and it's subtitled 2,000 Mules. We'll be right back. With the consumer price index increasing yet again, the stock market's been in absolute turmoil. Well, what's our illustrious leader doing to quell the surge of inflation that's destroying American families? Oh, yeah, spending more money and adding to the burden. Don't bury your head in the sand while your savings get decimated. Do something about it. I'm diversified into gold with Birch Gold, and you can be too. Text Dinesh to 989898. Birch Gold will send you a free information kit on protecting your savings with gold in a tax-sheltered account. These are great people with almost 20 years experience converting IRAs and 401ks into precious metals IRAs. Don't allow the left to devalue your savings. Text Dinesh to 989898. Claim your free information kit from Birch Gold. Again, you can hold physical gold and silver in a tax-sheltered retirement account, and Birch Gold will help you do it. Join their thousands of satisfied customers like me. Check them out. Text Dinesh to 989898. Secure your future with gold today. I'm back with Cash Patel, who has been involved in he's been involved in counterterrorism, National Security Council, National Intelligence, also Chief of Staff for the Department of Defense. But we're going to talk in this segment about Cash's new book. And here it is, The Plot Against the King, 2,000 Mules. By the way, this is a kind of second book after Cash's highly successful book called The Plot Against the King. Cash, tell us a little bit about this book. It's beautifully illustrated. I am actually a character, as is Debbie, in the book. It's downright hilarious to read, but it does also have, it's raising a very important theme that is being communicated in children's language to children. Talk a little bit about the story and how you devised this narrative.
Yeah, thanks so much. And great. Thank you for your kind note in The Plot Against the King, 2,000 Mules. I think it's really refreshing for readers to see that in a children's book so we can communicate to all. So we borrowed from Plot Against the King, book one. It was Russiagate. If you have 20 minutes and don't understand Russiagate, we made it into a family-friendly, non-political message about how to serve this country, the power of the truth, the importance of it, and that for teach our kids that that matters more than anything. It matters more than lying. And that was the message in Plot Against the King. We set it in a medieval kingdom, and it's all available at plotagainsttheking.com. So it was so successful that we thought, okay, let's do another version and let's continue the education process that you have been so involved with for so many years. And you were kind enough to lend us some of your expertise. And we thought, what's the other rail that the third rail that the American left doesn't want us touching? Russiagate and the election integrity process that you masterfully put together in 2,000 Mules. So we did a version for Plot Against the King, 2,000 Mules for adults and kids, similarly with graphics and wonderful artwork set in medieval time with Dinesh and Debbie, the curious candlestick makers. And we talk about simple things like, in a constitutional republic, which is what America is, why shouldn't our children learn about the democratic process? And on choosing day, as we call it in the book, if there's 100,000 people in the kingdom and 200,000 vote, that doesn't really add up. And you don't need to be a political scientist to know that. And so I just thought, you know, a continuation of this series, we'll have another book out next year, but to give our youth and our families something other than CRT and gender dynamics to teach when they're 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And it's exploded on Truth Social. President Trump launched the book for us. And his quote was, let's put this book in every school and library in the country. And we're really happy to do that. And I'd just like to add one fun fact, Dinesh. My friend, the legendary country musician, John Rich, was so in love with our project that he actually made a song called The Plot Against the King, which you can see on Rumble and on Truth Social, that is specifically made just for this book and this series. It's pretty cool.
This is awesome. I'm just going to read a couple of things because I like the way that this is presented in such a simple and even amusing way. So it starts by talking about the current king, King Donald, was traveling around the kingdom, giving speeches to enormous crowds of his loving people and asking them to keep the kingdom great by choosing him again. And then later in the book, you've got this very funny exchange here where now, Catherine and Greg are also, by the way, characters. These are Catherine and Greg from True the Vote. Something smells very wrong, Greg explained. We found a poo sample from a mule that had been at 27 different boxes, and it had glowing pink berries in it. Now, I love the way you take, you know, the technology of geo-tracking and, you know, in a sense, simplify it in a way that's charming, witty. Obviously, not only will children find this amusing, but of course, an adult that really knows the story of 2,000 Mules will also chuckle at the ingenuity of the way in which this was relayed. So, you know, this is talk a little bit about why you, Kash Patel, are writing children's books. What is the reason to reach that audience at that age?
Well, you know, it's sort of borrowing from the brilliance of your documentary.
No problem.
It's basically you had the, you know, as a former prosecutor, what's the best evidence? Video evidence, hard data, you know, geo-tracking locational information. You can't get around that. You know, there's no manufacturing that sort of evidence. And you did that in 2,000 Mules and you produced it. And we thought, okay, that's a little too technical for the kids and whatnot. But how about showing them that investigations matter? And then when you find evidence that you can work with, you can build off of that. So that's part of the story in Plot Against the King, 2,000 Mules. And we use glowing poo because it's fun, because it's traceable, because if it was left there, it was left there by a mule. And then the next question is, what were the mules doing, especially on choosing day, on election day? And the reason we tried to reach out to kids on this one is both kids and adults is because so many people motored past the 2020 election and the rigging of the 2020 election, just like they motored past Russiagate and half the country still thought Donald Trump was a Russian asset. So we have to wind back the clock and present them with the truth, no matter what the costs are to us personally. I know you've undertaken it more than maybe anyone in the country. And you know that the mission comes first. And so the truth for us matters more. And if you can have fun with it, with kids, with adults, and apparently on Truth Social, our book is, this book is exploding with pets. Dogs and cats are posting pictures of The Plot Against the King, 2,000 Mules, reading it themselves. You get families together. You get homeschoolers together. You get faith-based organizations together. We were on the Christian Television Network the other day, and they absolutely love the literature and the fun. But the core values I think we all share, truth, service, faith, mission, they're all laid out in this book in a really fun way.
It's good stuff. It's published by Brave Books by Kash Patel, The Plot Against the King 2, 2,000 Mules. Hey, Kash, really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much, Dinesh. Have a great day.
Odysseus is in Hades, the land of the dead, and he meets a pretty wide range of characters here. He meets his own mother, who really says to him that she died because of his absence. She died of heartbreak. She also informs him, and this is how, you know, Odysseus is able to get knowledge prior to getting home to Ithaca. She tells him, your father's alive, but he's a very old man. He's racked with grief. He's essentially living as a kind of a hermit. And he, too, is distraught over your absence. So Odysseus here understands the impact that his long absence has had and will continue to have. I say will continue to have because Odysseus is going to go from here, the underworld, on to Calypso's island. Remember, in Calypso's island, although this was introduced to us at the beginning of the narrative, chronologically, Odysseus will be on Calypso's island for 7 more years. So he is not even close right now to being home yet. But he's getting information, valuable information about what is happening at home. Now, Odysseus also meets the prophet Tiresias. Interestingly, Tiresias drinks some of the blood of the rams that Odysseus has sacrificed. This enables Tiresias to prophesy. So evidently the gift of prophecy that Tiresias has is somewhat dependent upon his ability to be able to, you may say, have a drink, in this case of blood. And Tiresias gives Odysseus a couple of important, one important piece of information and one important warning. The piece of information is he tells Odysseus all about the suitors, and he tells Odysseus that his wife is essentially under siege, that she is hanging on but can only hang on for so long, and his son is also in danger. The suitors obviously want to get rid of Telemachus. That's how they're able to usurp Odysseus's estate. So Odysseus knows that his family is in deep trouble. And again, think about this. When we, at the beginning of the Odyssey, see Odysseus on Calypso's island and he's weeping and he's longing to get home, it's in part because he already knows that things are very bad at home. They're getting worse by the day. He's desperately needed. And yet that feeling of desperation persists in Odysseus for 7 long years while he's a captive on Calypso's island. But here, through this narrative device of the underworld, of Hades, Homer has managed to give Odysseus a kind of a tip-off through or via the prophet Tiresias of what awaits him at home. So at least when Odysseus does get home, he's not going to be like, what's going on here? He knows the danger. He knows the threat. And he now has to figure out a plan for how to deal with it. But at least he has the knowledge of the enemies of his household that are now in his household. Now, the other thing that Tiresias tells Odysseus is that when you leave the underworld, he says, you're going to have to, on your way back to Ithaca, stop by the island of the sun god. This is the sun god named Helios. And Tiresias says, whatever your men do, tired and hungry though they might be, do not eat the cattle of the sun god. Because if you do, you will enrage him and he will strike out at you and it will be very bad for you and your men. So Tiresias gives Odysseus a warning. As we will see, Odysseus does heed the warning, but his men don't. And he loses a lot of his men on the island of the sun god Helios, because in fact hunger overtakes them. They do eat the cattle of the sun god. But here, in the very Homeric style, these events that are going to come to pass are foretold before they occur. It's a very interesting narrative device, and we can think in across literature of ways in which great writers have used this narrative device. Think, for example, about one of the opening scenes of Julius Caesar. Caesar is walking through the crowd, and a blind prophet, very similar to Tiresias, says, "Beware the Ides of March," warning Caesar of his coming assassination. And Caesar basically says, well, the Ides of March have come. And the prophet says, yeah, but they haven't gone. In other words, they're not over yet. You're not in the clear. And of course, Caesar arrogantly, dismissively, you know, this man is a dreamer, pass. And he ignores the advice. He thinks that he is in some ways invincible, but he's not. And assassination awaits him, you may say, right around the corner. Here, too, Tiresias is giving Odysseus warnings. Odysseus, it's not that he dismisses it the way Caesar did. He takes the warning seriously. But as we will see, what happens is, while Odysseus is, in a sense, I think he's asleep. I'll be looking at that section before I talk about it. And his men go ahead and do exactly what Tiresias warned them not to do. And of course, they pay a terrible price for doing it.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.